this name? You want this name?
Yeah, leave it. Hi, everybody. My name's Leo, and I'm an alcoholic. And let me tell you, it is a joy to be in Eureka Springs and to be sharing your anniversary. And let me say that Ralph and Tom and the committee have, as you would expect, gone out of their ways to make me feel so welcome and so at home. You've probably gathered by now that I'm not a native of Arkansas. I'm from that little country, England, where men are men and sheep are nervous. It sure beats pigeons. You know, a long time ago, I think it was George Bernard Shaw said that America and England are two countries divided by a common language. And what they mean is sometimes you'll say something and it doesn't mean the same to me. And sometimes I'll say something that doesn't mean the same to you. And at times, it can be real confusing. I mean, my mother's 76 and my father 78. Now my mother, she came to stay with me in California because I come from California. I've lived there for 8 years, by the way, in America, and I love America. And I love being here. And I just want to share with you something because this is really very important to me. There are many things that America has contributed to the world. I believe the biggest and the most important thing you have contributed to the world and that I benefit from is this thing we call the 12-step program. But my mother and father were staying. I had to watch my mother. My mother's real strange. I don't know whether many of you have a mother who's strange, but my mother's the kind of person who can ask a question and answer a question and walk away mad. And anyway, my mother, you have to watch her, but I was educated by the Jesuits for 7 years, but I'm an Episcopalian priest, and we had the bishop and his wife for dinner, and my mother behaved herself real well until the bishop was leaving. And as I say, she's 76, and she got the bishop by the hand, and she said, "Bishop," she said, "it's been real nice having you and the wife for dinner." She said, "Now do, go home, and remember, keep your pecker up." Because in England, the pecker means your nose. But it doesn't mean the nose in America. Bishop's wife was heard to say, "I wish he could." Every country has its famous trunks. You have Dean Martin. Well, we have Winston Churchill. I don't know whether many of you know this, but in England, Winston used to drink about a bottle of brandy a day. Now, I don't know whether Winston was alcoholic or not. All I know is there are some stories told about Winston that I can identify with. The lovely story, Winston Churchill is sitting at dinner with Lady Astor. And Lady Astor turns to Winston Churchill and says, Winnie, you're drunk." And Winston Churchill, in his inimitable way, said, "Madam, you are ugly, but I shall wake up sober in the morning." She was very quick to say to him, she said, Winnie, if I was your wife, I'd put poison in your soup." "Madam, if I was your husband, I'd drink it." Now, those are supposedly true stories told about Winston Churchill, but ladies and gentlemen, do they not reveal the symptoms of the disease? The arrogance of the alcoholic. The manipulation of the alcoholic. The tricky-dicky behavior, how he switches the conversation from himself onto her. And there is not an alcoholic in this room who cannot identify with that. Now, if it is true that you can catch the disease in the joke, I believe also you can catch recovery in the joke. And there's a beautiful story of a woman alcoholic 7 years in the program. But she marries a man who's very old-fashioned. And on their wedding night, he takes her to the bedroom. And he takes off his trousers. And he throws his trousers in the middle of the bedroom. He says, "Wife, get into those trousers." She says, "I can't get into those trousers." He says, "No. And don't you forget, who wears the trousers in this marriage?" Oh, old fashioned. Now remember, she's got 7 years in the program. She does no more. She takes off her little panties. And she throws her panties in the middle of the bedroom. She says, "Husband, get into those panties." He says, "I can't get into those panties." She says, "No, and you won't until you change your attitude." You may say, what has recovery got to do with panties? Everything. Sometimes clergymen can be very stuffy. And also, if I may say so, very naive, as well as nuns. And there's a story I tell very quickly of a priest and a nun and a donkey in the desert. And the donkey, in the middle of the desert, the donkey dies. Bah! And the nun and the nun and the priest are talking to each other, and it says, "We've finished now. Finished. Stuck in the desert, no donkey. We're going to die." He says, "You know, sister," he says, "I've been a priest since I was 19. He says, "I'm going to die now." He says, "I just want to share with you. I've never seen a woman naked." She says, "Never?" He says, "Never." She says, "You haven't even seen pictures?" He says, "No." She says, "Would you like to see?" He says, "Oh, be nice before I die." She says, "It's not a problem." She takes off her habit and everything. She says, "Look, what do you think?" She says, "Father, I've been a nun since I was 14. And I've never seen a man naked." He says, "Never." She says, "No. It's not even pictures." She says, "Never." She said, "Would you like to see?" She says, "Surely." He says, "It's not a problem." Takes off all his clothes. She goes, she says, what's that? He says, "If I put that inside you, it brings life." She says, "Don't put it in me, put it in the donkey." To happy destiny. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't think I'm the first to acknowledge this, and I surely won't be the last, that one of the great qualities of recovery is the ability to be able to laugh. The ability to be able to have that sense of humour again. And I've heard many speakers say that, what is recovery? What is it worth? Unless there is that special ingredient of humour. Either to make people laugh or to be able to laugh. Because I don't know about you, but I believe that God created this world for us to be happy. And so many of us, regardless of our addictions, have done amazingly well at being able not only to hurt ourselves, but to hurt the very people that we love. Our road to happy destiny today, which we're celebrating tonight here, and you've had speakers yesterday and we'll have some tomorrow morning, is to be able to share a wonderful message. A message that is based on our ability to see. If you want to ever write down in your journals one of the most powerful words in our English vocabulary, it is the word to see. Because you see, those of us who've been able to see have been able to change. If you don't see, you never change. There's a story that I tell when I was watching Ted Koppel on Nightline television. And he was interviewing a man called Elie Wiesel, who won the Nobel Prize some years ago. And he's a writer, and he's a thinker, and he's a speaker. And he talks particularly about the Holocaust. And in the interview, Ted Koppel said to Elie Wiesel, he says, Elie, you've been talking about the Holocaust for years now. And he said, it happened over 40 years ago. He says, why do you keep writing about it? And anybody said, I write about the Holocaust and I talk about the Holocaust and I'll never end speaking about it, because if I don't, it might all come back. And when he said that, I wasn't thinking of the Holocaust of Nazi Germany. I was thinking of another kind of Holocaust that has devastated far more lives and destroyed far more millions of people of every race and culture and religion. And that is the disease of alcoholism, the disease of addiction. And I was made to think, what is this strength? Because I do believe that it is a miraculous strength of this 12-step program. What is the strength of this program that gets so many of us to meet together here in the Ozarks? And probably every weekend there is some convention going on somewhere. The same humor. Ordinary people from ordinary lives and ordinary backgrounds having ordinary fun. What is it about this program? I believe it is based on the same principles. Do you see? We talk about it and we speak about it. We lecture about it. We write about it. You have a big book study to study it. Why? So that it won't all come back. We've learned something, even if we don't always talk about it, we've learned something, and that is, pain is not our enemy, pain is our friend. And you ignore or you forget pain at your peril. I'll tell you why I'm here. I'll tell you how I came here. I'll tell you that my birthday date is the 4th of July, 1977. A day I'll never forget. A day I was told by my sponsor never to forget. A day that was filled with pain, like many days before it. And I've had and I've seen good friends of mine, men and women, young and old, who've relapsed. Every one of them, whoever relapsed because for a day, or for an hour, or yes, even for a minute, they forgot who they were. My name is Leo, and I am an alcoholic. And for me to ever continue on this road of happy destiny, I must never forget who I am. And that's why this program works. And I know there are people who are new in the program here, some with weeks, if not days. Perhaps some in this audience, which is so large, still using. I tell you, if you're an alcoholic and an addict and you use, it will not work. There's not money or brains or background that can ever help you out of it. All you have to do is see. That small word, to see. Some of you in this audience are like me. You are Christian. Well, let me tell you something about that carpenter from Nazareth. That carpenter from Nazareth had no difficulty getting blind people to see, but he had tremendous difficulty getting people who see to see. The danger is for those people who think they know so much. We all, every one of us, regardless of years, need to learn from each other. And we can do a lot worse than learn from this incredible program that says to me as a speaker tonight, say what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And say it the best way you can, but say it. And be as honest as you can be, because you have nothing to fear. And every now and again when we have an audience of this kind, people say to me, do you feel nervous? No. I never feel nervous. Because there's only one person in this auditorium that has ever hurt me, and that is me. You never hurt me. You never took away my job. You never made my mother cry. You never took me to jail, and you never made me physically, mentally, and emotionally sick. You never did any of those things. I did. I have nothing to fear from you. I have an awful lot to fear from me. Those of you who think you're very intelligent, very clever, perhaps too clever for this program, let me tell you, it is simplicity that is always profound. The clever teacher can use simple language, because simple language is enough. And I could write books on the word to see. And so I do what the program tells me to do. To share as best way I possibly can. And by the way, I am sharing tonight for me. I need to hear what I'm saying tonight again. I need to remember what brought me here, because if I don't, I have nothing. This is a program that is so flexible. I've said, on more than one occasion, and proudly said it, we have only just begun. There are more people attending 12-step meetings throughout the week than churches on Sundays. The influence of the 12-step long time ago reached my country in England. And I'm fortunate to be able to speak in countries like Thailand, like Hong Kong, New Zealand, Australia, and I see the same. People from all backgrounds, all cultures, based on this, yes, spiritual program. It's not a religious program, this. I'm not here because I'm a priest, I'm here because I'm an alcoholic recovering. This is a program that unites Jew with Catholic, Catholic with Protestant. Yes, and there is a chapter to the agnostic, because we know that there are many people who have been hurt by religion. People who've been made to feel guilty, judged and ashamed of their alcoholism or their father's alcoholism because of religion. This program, when it started over 50 years ago, could easily have said, having had a religious awakening, but it didn't. It clearly said, this is a spiritual program. And I am moved when I am in a country like Thailand or like Israel, and I see Buddhist and Jew along with the Christian saying the same program, based on the same steps, remembering the same principles. So for any of you in this audience who think that I'm here to try to convert, forget it. Christians are an interesting crowd. A friend of mine who's a bishop said of his congregation one morning, he said, the sea has given up its dead and they're all here. But we're not like that. We're so alive. Truly we're so alive. We've even touched this city. We're so alive because there is a spiritual awakening. And the spiritual awakening, if you said to me, what is this spiritual awakening that I share tonight of my life story? What is this spiritual awakening? It's when I am able to love me today. Today I love me and I give myself permission to play and to be free. And I hope you do the same. There are no gurus in this program. There are no commandments. There are no rules in this program, regardless of what anybody can tell you. It is suggestions only. And a cautionary note. If you want what we have, then you will be prepared to do what we did. I started drinking when I was 16 in a private school in England. Nothing very extraordinary. They gave me beer to drink. And I tell you, it wasn't that I liked the taste. It wasn't that I got drunk right away. But I liked how I felt when I drank. Again, many speakers say this is a disease of the feelings. This is a disease that particularly affects those with low self-esteem. I am 5'7". 5'8" on a very good day. But when I drank alcohol, I felt 6'2". I felt bigger, stronger. I had a stutter until I was about 15. And people used to make fun of me, but when I drank, stutter went. And I thought I'd found a friend in a bottle. Like many of you, I didn't understand about alcoholism and I certainly didn't consider it a drug. I thought I'd found a friend in a bottle. And this friend was going to be with me through all my life. And just like in this country, so in mine, good times were with the bottle. Adults drank. In my country, bishops, clergy, everybody who was somebody drank. And I wanted to be just like them. And they say in the big book, it's cunning, baffling and powerful. It's also patient. It can wait. And I remember when I was first ordained in 1971, I went to develop a ministry to the bars in England. Oh, I'd be surprised. I said, of course I lied, but I said, I'm going to the lost and the lonely, those sheep without a shepherd. And I know where they are. They're all in the bars. Now I tell you, if you walk into a bar dressed like this, people notice you. It's a penguin at the end of the bar. And I walk in all slicks, just come in. And everybody wants to buy a priest a drink. Even if they don't like you, they'd send you a drink. Father, have a drink. Have a double. And sure enough, because we do have, as many of the ladies in this room know, we do have charm. Alcoholics have charm. And I got it so that people were saying to me in the bar, God, you're not like other priests. You're down to earth. You're the kind of priest God would be proud of. You smoke like we smoke. You drink like we drink. Yeah. You vomit like we vomit. People started to come from the bars to church. My church was full of drinkers. I remember one husband said to his wife, Elizabeth, shall we go to church and listen to Father Leo, or shall we stay at home and listen to Benny Hill? Because the same thing's going to be happening. And it did. I remember once drunk doing a funeral. Followed the coffin into the hole. I tell you, it's real scary when you hear the amens coming from above. But it was an Irish funeral. So they helped me out and we went and drank some more. But nobody knows about that. I tell people. Nobody knows about that. I tell people. But the next one, people were going to know about. You see, I don't know whether you realize this, but priests do baptisms. And we do baptisms usually on a Sunday afternoon about 3 o'clock. Now, like many of you, I used to have a long drinking lunchtime. So at 3 o'clock, I don't say that I was drunk for this funeral, but I was like mellow, you know what I mean? Mellow. And when you're mellow, you don't want anyone to tell you what to do, because you just know what to do, you know? So I got there and all the baptism family were there. I mean, the grandparents were there, the parents were there, the friends were there. I mean, it was just great. And then I arrived. I said, give me the baby. Hey, come on, give me the baby. Let's get this moving. Give me the baby. And I got the water and I started and baptized the baby in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, Daphne. And I didn't ask anybody. The mother let loose such a scream. She said, Father Leo, it's a little boy. I said, I don't care what the hell it is. It's Daphne now. She said, is there anything we can do about it? I said, no. No. Forever and a day he will be called Daphne. How do you make amends to a thing like that? I know. I should bring him over to California, huh? The mother and the father, they were angry. So they wrote a letter to the bishop. And I got a telephone call, like many of you may have done, in this room, from an employer. Now, remember, a bishop's only an employer dressed in purple. And I got this telephone call early in the morning, and the bishop said, he said, Booth! I says, yeah. He said, I want to see you tomorrow. Put the phone down. I thought, why? I'd forgotten about this baptism. I thought, why does the bishop want to see me? Then I got it. Ah, promotion. I go to see the bishop and the bishop says, I've got a letter. A letter. A letter! So I said, good. He said it's about you. It's about you. He said, do you make a habit? I mean, do you make a habit of baptizing little boys with girls' names. What's the matter with you? Are you sick? Are you demented? Are you having a breakdown? And then he said it right eyeball to eyeball. Just right in the fuck. Just like that, he said. Have you been drinking? Have you been drinking, Booth? Now see if you can identify with this. Who? Me? No! I swear on the Bible! No! But he didn't believe me! But he couldn't prove it! He couldn't prove it! Have you ever been in a situation like that? When you know you're telling a lie, and they know you're telling a lie, and you know that they know you're telling a lie, but they can't prove it! But I'm driving home. I'm driving home, and my disease talks to me. And it said, Leo, Leo, lie low, lie low. Now, I don't know what kind of alcoholic you are, because, you know, it is cunning, and it is baffling, and it is powerful, which means it's tricky. I could leave it alone for 6 months. And I want you to know that there are a lot of people who die, because they don't understand what alcoholism is. It hasn't got anything to do with how much you drink. It hasn't got anything to do with when you drink. It hasn't got anything to do with what you drink. There are many different experts on alcoholism as there are in this room. All I can tell you is that the results are the same. Unmanageability and powerlessness that you have to interpret to your life. Do you see? See, I could leave it alone. And because I could leave it alone, I said I was not an alcoholic. The very fact that I could leave it alone told me that I was not an alcoholic. I was one of those many stupid people who said, alcoholics drink all day and every day. A very small percentage drink all day and every day. Just before the great Richard Burton died, he talked about the fact that for many months, when he was on location doing movies, he stopped drinking. But when he went back to it, always there was the problems and the pain. And that's how it was with me. Some of the things for you to identify with: wet beds. Blackout. Personality change. For a long time I said, I never physically abused my mother and father. It is not true. What is true is, I never wanted to talk about it. But the truth is, my mother and my father have since told me many times, and they would have then been in their 60s, how to drink and how I changed. I would push them, shove them, and yes, thump and use the fist. It's not because I'm proud of that. It's because I want you to know that we do change. And sometimes our spouses and our families are not always, because of kindness or because of politeness, they don't always tell us what we were like. and we don't always want to know. But you ask yourself, why are they so afraid of us? Why are they even today, especially some of the children, nervous and frightened? And it may take many years for the healing to go away. Of course, this unmanageability and powerlessness does create a personality change. And it's very interesting because so many of us flippantly refer to the Jekyll and Hyde syndrome. It is interesting that when Dr. Jekyll became Mr. Hyde, he had to drink the potion. Always remember that. And also when he became Mr. Hyde, Dr. Jekyll never knew what he did as Mr. Hyde. A blackout. Also, Mr. Hyde always cunningly came out, but Dr. Jekyll thought he was in control. Until one day, one awesome day, Dr. Jekyll was with his fiancée and he placed his arm around the shoulder. And when he looked down, he saw that it was Mr. Hyde's hand now who was in control. And there's that line that is crossed when that almost cruel and violent personality takes over. And it led in Mr. Hyde's case and Dr. Jekyll to their deaths. Interesting story for us. But here's the point. The book was written by a great writer called Robert Louis Stevenson. Robert Louis Stevenson was an alcoholic. I believe that that was one of the many early books that was written about alcoholism without the word ever having been mentioned. But everybody in this room can identify with the behavior and the change. And so it was with me. But the biggest single pain for me was a loneliness. And I must share with you, 12 years into my recovery, I still, at times, am lonely. A loneliness inside. People say it's always like an aching loneliness inside that I still have. The difference today is that I can learn to live with it. And what I've discovered is that so many other people have that same loneliness. It's not that I don't have fun. It's not that I don't have friends. It's not that I'm not loved. It's not that I don't enjoy my life to the full, because I promise you I do. But there is in me, and I suspect in you, that loneliness. And all I will share with you is this. Saint Augustine, a long time ago, said, "We are restless until we rest in God." Perhaps part of our happy destiny is that we're going home. We're going home to who we are, and we will spend all our lives, hopefully in sobriety, discovering the spiritual joy of who we are. But we will never rest perfectly until we rest in God. When I left the bishop that particular day, I share with you, I did not drink for 6 months. And there were to be other episodes and other calamities, and it always got worse. And then I was to have what I described to you tonight as my special moment. I had been not drinking for a time. And the telephone went and I was invited to a party. It was a ladies' engagement party and I went. And when I was there, I'd been drinking 7-Up. I'd been drinking 7-Up for months. I was fizzed out on 7-Up. I had not been going to AA. I had not been around recovering people. Ladies and gentlemen, you will understand what I mean when I say I was dry. Now, dry is like a leaf. Think of dry, like a dry leaf. A dry leaf, any pressure placed upon the leaf and it will snap or break. And a dry person is like that, even though you don't drink or you don't use. If you're dry, At the slightest provocation, you snap. Sobriety is not about being dry. We learn in these rooms, that's why we need this program, we learn in these rooms how to bend. The same analogy with a leaf. In sobriety, we have a supple leaf. We don't break. We don't snap. We learn to live and let live. We learn how to bend because there were days when we didn't. We learn how to accept because there was a time when we judged mercilessly. We learn how to love. And we learn how to love ourselves. Now, I was dry. I was ready to snap. I was ready to be angry. And she knew it, and she said to me, she said, "Father Leo, I knew you when you drank, and I see you now, and you're not the same." And I said, "I know." And what she did was, ladies and gentlemen, she said, "Why don't you have one drink?" And it seemed like a good idea. It was my last drunk, really, or part of it. But remember, please, every one of us, cunning, baffling, and powerful. I had two drinks and I went home. Only two, but I went home, but I left my watch in the restroom of the hotel where the engagement was. And when I woke up the next morning, I noticed my watch was not on my wrist. So I telephoned the barman. His name was George and I knew him. I said, "George, have you found a watch?" He said, "I found a watch in the restroom." I said, "It's mine." He said, "I'll keep it." I said, "Good." I said, "George, I'm very worried." This is why. I said, "I had two drinks last night." He said, "Leo, you were great last night." I said, "I know, but I'm not supposed to drink. If the bishop gets to know..." He said, "Leo, you were great." I said, "George, do you think that I'm alcoholic?" He said, "No way. Alcoholic? You had two drinks, you went home. How can you be alcoholic?" I said, "I know, George." I said, "Are you sure? I mean, George, are you really sure?" And then he said his immortal words. He says, "Leo, if you're an alcoholic, I'm an alcoholic." And he is. And I go to get my watch, you know, I go to get my watch, and while I'm getting my watch, it's early in the morning, hey, 4th of July, I go to get my watch, and he says, "Have a drink." Same glass, same bar, same barman. When I took that drink that morning, it was different. You know what I mean. Somebody described it so well, the lion was disturbed. And I started to have, and you'll understand, a thirst. I wanted to drink. Now last night, 2 was enough. This morning, 2 or 22, not enough. And I took off my coat, and I undid my collar, and I went to drink. And I know now, with this program, I was now out of control. And I went from bar to bar. Ladies and gentlemen, I am describing to you my last drink. I was out of control and I went from bar to bar. And at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I was driving home, drunk. And my car hit a tree. And it hit a lamppost. And it shot through the air. And apparently, there were 2 old ladies in the garden, and they said, "Look, there goes Father Leo." That's how he travels now. But I didn't stay there. I came down, bang, crash, bang. And I'm sat at the side. I mean, I'm sat at the side of the road. And I'm bleeding, and I'm hurt. And I had, ladies and gentlemen, and hear these words for the force that they're meant to have. I had a moment. A moment when I stood out of myself. And I saw me hurt, and I saw me bleeding, and I saw me dirty. And in very simple words, I did not like what I was becoming. I did not like the kind of man I was becoming. Do you see? I've shared this story many times with people. It's an intervention. An intervention that came from a car crash I'll never forget. And I saw me hurt, bleeding, dirty, unmanageable, powerless. Do you see? Some of you, it may have come because your wife said, "I love you, George. God knows I love you. But I can't take any more. And I want you to hear me because I'm going to leave. If you don't get well, I really am going to leave." And at that moment, you know, I mean, it's like it's real. I did an intervention about 6 months ago with a big man from Bank of America. I mean, he's in like six-figure salary. And there are a lot of people there to go and talk to this man because of his drinking. And you know what did it? A five-year-old daughter. All she did was say about two sentences, "I love you, Daddy. And when you drink, I'm scared." And this great, big, powerful man, tears came. And he just said, "What do I do?" Do you see? How you get here may be different, but it's the same. Some with suicide attempt. Some car crash like me. Some jail. Some divorce. Some you're so sick, I mean physically sick, that you can't go on. All of us got here through pain. I don't care who you are or what you are, or how old you are or how you look. You're here because of pain. Do you see? And I called up the bishop, and the bishop heard me, and it's very interesting. He's now a very close friend, and I see him on my visits to England every year. And he says to me, and he's not in this program, he says, but he uses a word that we do. He said, "When you call me up, Leo, when you call me up," he said, "I'll tell you, I thought you'd surrender." Now, he doesn't know that word like we do. And I don't believe for one minute that that moment meant that I surrendered, but it was my journey. And if you like to use a cliche, I think surrender is a process, not an event. I think every day we are surrendering. We never surrender. That's something that happens at the end. But I began that journey with that moment. And for those of you who are like me, interested in the works of God, I believe that God is sending every minute, every second, rays of His love. But this one moment, I grabbed onto it. And I have never stopped holding on. And I went into treatment, and I went to AA through treatment. And let me tell you about that meeting in AA. I went there and I heard speakers and I sat around, and some of you may think, I bet he didn't like it. I heard a Jewish woman talk. My story. And that was in the first few days of my AA. And she came over to me and she hugged me and she says, "I'm a Jew and you're a Christian and we're both children." And I went back to that AA meeting, and I want you to know that one of the best guys that ever helped me was not a PhD or an MA. He wasn't a great thinker or a writer, and he never really gave a speech like this before crowds of people in his life. But I am grateful to his honesty. He was a man called Harry. And there's something about Harry's in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're all very similar. He used to smoke all the time. And he was small. He was about 5'3", and he had about 15 years of the program. And he said, "Leo,
I say, Leo, I want to tell you something. I said, what, Harry? He said, I want to tell you something. Come here. He says, Leo, you're full of shit. I said, what? It's you're full of shit. I said, I don't have to take this, Harry. I said, you don't have to be my sponsor. I said, I'm going to call my mother. He said, Leo, you can call the Pope. You're still full of shit. And ladies and gentlemen, he was right. In this program, I never left it. I lost, just for some of you to know, I went into a recovery home. I was in treatment for 3 months. I went into a recovery home for 6 months. I want you to know that I paid my dues. I shared a room with 4 other men and I didn't have many clothes. The bishop wasn't sure whether I'd be able to stay being a priest. I went from day to day, but I knew that without my sobriety, I wouldn't have anything anyway. I had love from AA. The church really didn't want to know. You did. I've never forgotten that. They prayed for me, but they weren't sure whether they wanted me. I think you know the type. Here, you not only prayed for me, you wanted me and you told me. And I like to believe the fact that you wanted me was your prayer, because there are many ways of praying. Well, as it happened, it worked out well. But there was pain. I learned in this program that my God was too small. And if you have a small God, you stay a small person. If you have a judgmental God, you will learn to judge. If you have a God that's full of righteous anger, you'll learn to be angry. But if you have a God of love and forgiveness, you'll learn how to forgive. And you'll learn how to love. You taught me that. You taught me that it wasn't about the color of your skin or your sexual orientation. It wasn't about how much money you had or how much you didn't have. It was about the kind of person you were. The kind of person you were inside. And you took a very, very superficial young snob and you made him into, I hope, somebody a day at a time who's being real. You taught me that I had to have a God as I understand him. As I understand him, not as somebody else does. And you shared with me the biggest thing. You shared with me that not only did I have a message, you told me I was the message. Because if it's a program of attraction, then how we walk, and how we talk, and how we smile, and how we greet one another makes all the difference. It isn't what we say, it's who we are. We don't have a message, ladies and gentlemen. We are the message. And I end my sharing with you tonight by telling you of a beautiful story that is true. I went to speak in Atlanta some years ago now to a large crowd like this, and I shared my moment. And a young man, 17 years old, alcoholic and a cocaine addict, and came over afterwards and shook me by the hand. And he says, Father Leo, I want to shake you by the hand. I said, thanks. He says, my name's David. I'm alcoholic and a cocaine addict. I said, hello, David. He says, hi. He said, I'm in a recovery home. I said, good. And then he said, I loved what you said about your moment. I said, thanks. And he said, you know your moment? He says, do you think you can have a moment? Do you think you can have a moment without a car crash? I said, surely. He says, do you think God can speak to you outside of the church? I said, I know he can. God is never a prisoner of any church. And then he said to me, he said, does it seem funny for me to say to you that I heard God speak to me through the song of a music? The song of music that I kind of heard 1,000 times, but I've never heard it. And I said, no, it doesn't. I said, because God speaks through priests and prophets, and he also speaks through ministers, but he also speaks through writers and songs and musicians and sponsors and this program. He said, because he said, I've heard this song 1,000 times, but I'd never heard it. And he said, I was hurting for cocaine. And I'd have sold anything for cocaine. And I was going out to get some. And on the radio, I heard a song that spoke to me. I said, David, what were the words of that song? Because if it touched you so, who knows, it may touch somebody else. He said, the words of the song was sung originally by the Beatles, and it's now been made famous by Tina Turner. I say to you these words. When I was a young man, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now those days have gone. I'm not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind, and I've opened up the door. So help me. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. And I do appreciate you being around. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, help me. And he said, Father Leo, there was help for me. I said, I know, David. Because many years ago, there was help for me. That's our message tonight. That's our message at this special convention meeting. Our road to destiny that we take with these steps, the steps of the program, is about the help that is here that we need only reach for. And it's in this room. If you were to tell me the 3 things that this program gives to every one of us, I would say it was this. In this program, we will live again. In this program, we will love again. And in this program, we will discover the ability to love again. Thank you very much indeed for listening. Thank you.